Time for the Car Doctor on AM 950 WROL. Got a car question? Call us at 617-770-3030. That's 617-770-3030. Now, here's the Car Doctor, John Paul, on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston.
And good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, or maybe you're listening on FM 100.3, or maybe you're listening on the stream, WROLradio.com. Who knows where you're listening? You could be listening everywhere. Dennis is looking all upset. Something's wrong.
The recording isn't working. I got to figure it out.
All right. Well, you do that. You do that. And we'll do other stuff. We'll let you do whatever you do over there, because... And besides, it was your birthday this week. Take it easy. We understand you got a year older this week.
Yesterday.
Yesterday, is that when it was?
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
Absolutely.
All right, well, go fix that.
I'm doing it.
Do you? Yeah. You got it all figured out, do you? Anyway. Hey, we have an in-studio guest. We'll get to him in just a second. We'll just cover a few things. We don't get in-studio guests very often, there's some interesting stories in the news this morning, and one of them, which I thought was kind of interesting, and this was a dealership in Connecticut, and it was the controller of a Connecticut BMW store. She used some embezzled funds to buy a car. But then she stole another $50,000 to buy a Ford Mustang. Then she stole some more money. And apparently she ended up with about $755,000 of the dealership's money. It says here that, let's see, who is she? Her last name is Small. She's of New Windsor, New York. She pleaded guilty to wire fraud and was sentenced in U.S. District Court to 30 months in prison. She's scheduled to report to prison on February 2nd. Prosecutors allege that she enriched herself by means of material false and fraudulent pretenses, representations, and promises. The dealership's insurance policies covered most of the loss, but apparently not all of it, according to the prosecution. In addition to prison, she's been required to pay back all the money. She paid back about $200,000 so far. Wire fraud carries a maximum possible sentence of 20 years in prison and a fine of more than $2.2 million. She lived pretty good with her stolen money, including first-class travel for herself and her husband to Jamaica, Australia, Mexico, and payments to contractors who landscaped and remodeled her home. She began embezzling 50 business days after being hired. So she only worked for about a month and a half before she started stealing money. And she was making $150,000 a year, which included the personal use of a luxury vehicle. It says here, Vanessa thrived on making it seem like she was being a hero and pointing out flaws and help improve them. Apparently, the flaws were how to make more money for herself. And to steal from us, according to the president of the company, Paula Kalari, said in court as part of the witness impact statement, Kalari said the thievery caused the store a huge amount of trouble, I guess, if you're stealing almost $1 million. We were concerned of the dealership finances and that we're not making profits the way we should have been. We had to let go many of our people. Apparently, they weren't watching their own books, is what it comes down to. Says here she was motivated by greed. The U.S. Attorney's Office said in court filings that Venice Small was motivated by greed and called her an active consumer of non-essential expenditures, including cosmetic surgery and fashionable clothes. It used such terms as high-volume spending habits, opulent lifestyle, and lavish materialism. A forensic audit showed that actually she stole $904,659 through 65 unauthorized electronic fund transfers from the bank account with the money going into her personal American Express account. In one such transaction, dealership bank wired $18,000 to American Express. In addition, she wrote 28 bogus checks totaling over $200,000 to pay her own credit cards. Contractors worked on her home and dealership where she bought the Mustang. Prosecutors said she also chalked up $31,000 in unauthorized reimbursements and credit card expenses. She's pretty professional at this. In a sentencing memo, the prosecution sought a 31 to 41 month prison term and said she had a history of financial improprieties with at least two prior employers, both of which fired her. A spokesman for the U.S. Attorney General's office said she wasn't prosecuted in those cases, according to court filing. In Venice Small's presenting memorandum, the defense lawyers asked for probation. She is not a hardened criminal. Seems like she might have been. Memorandum said the illegal activity represents an aberration of her behavior and character and resulted from, in part from emotional and mental challenges. Her defense attorneys didn't return emails or phone calls. The owner of the dealership had a little different thing. The only thing that Vanessa was sorry about is that she stayed with our company too long and got caught. People like Vanessa do not change their stripes. Interesting. You getting that to work over there?
I'm trying something new.
All right. Okay. Well, we're going to talk to Josh anyway. Even though I wanted to record it, you wanted to record it, but we'll talk to him anyway. So in the studio with us, we had Josh on the phone with us. What was it, back in the summertime?
Yeah, I think it was like a May.
Yeah. And refresh everybody. You took a Ram van and turned it into basically a house.
Yeah, that's right. It's basically a camper van. So I took a cargo van and I built it out with a kitchen and a composting toilet and a bed and storage and cabinets, and runs on solar power. And a lot of people have been doing it. It's sort of becoming a movement a little bit. And it's been a really great year. I started in April and I just finished. I'm back in Boston. I'm back home and visiting family for the holidays. And it was such a great trip that I'm gonna try and keep it going. Do it again this coming year, 2019.
What do you do for work?
So I'm in real estate. I'm a real estate broker in Florida, and I also own some rental properties that I've accumulated over the years, and I invest in real estate, like flipping houses and apartment buildings and stuff like that. But I'm kind of the opposite of that lady you just talked about I'm very minimalistic. I don't like a lot of things I don't need a lot of things to make myself happy. So I actually don't spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So my overhead's pretty low. So that's really what allows me to travel. It's not, necessarily how much money I make. It's how much money I'm spending.
Okay. And when you're doing this, when you're out on the road, are you still able to conduct business?
I am. I try and have everything done when I leave so that I can focus on not focusing. So I can sort of turn my brain off, so to speak.
Okay.
I do need to take care of, higher level things, but all the little intricacies of everyday type operating stuff I try and avoid and really focus on detaching from society or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I the tiny house craze, I guess, which is sort of building a little house on a trailer chassis and towing it around, is similar to that, right?
Yeah, actually, that was kind of the spark that had me interested in doing this. I actually started looking at tiny houses, and I realized that if I was really going to do this, tiny houses were too big.
Yeah.
So it sounds kind of funny, but if you think of a tiny house and you really think about the practicality of it, if you want to travel like I do, which is, in remote areas and, national parks and stuff like that, you can't roll into, Yellowstone National Park with a tiny house.
Yeah.
And a lot of the RV parks don't allow tiny houses. So unless they have some certification, RV certification. So I kind of threw out the tiny house pretty quickly, because with tiny houses, you have to make arrangements of where you're going to keep it, months in advance, and you're really just not mobile enough. And so I quickly figured out that, if I really wanted to do the type of traveling that I wanted to do, I was going to need to go even smaller than a tiny house.
Yeah. And the thing about, I've watched the TV show a couple of times. The thing about the tiny house is, first off, I kind of wonder how solid they really would be when they're being, if you were moving them more than a couple of times, because they still are wooden brackets and screws. And the second thing is, they always end up on a $3 million piece of property. So there's this, $50,000, 200 square foot or 100 square foot tiny house, and it's on this piece of property that it's always sort of the same thing. It's like, this is my parents' property overlooking, someplace beautiful. And it's like, yeah, but you can't do that if you live in, if you don't have that connection to something, I guess. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of why I did the whole van thing, is because, with those tiny houses, you gotta figure out, they're really for moving maybe once or twice a year, six months here, 6 months there. If that, really, it's not practical for somebody that wants to travel a lot, and I looked at RVs as well. And the problem with RVs is a lot of them are kind of cookie cutter, and they're very large. They do have smaller, they're starting to make smaller like van RVs, but with most of the RVs, you have to plug them in when you get to where you're going, because they run on, a lot of the stuff that they run on is 110 volt.
Yeah.
And they have to be connected to water. What I wanted was something that I could have like a pretty nice size water tank, I have my power hooked up to solar, but it also charges on my off of my alternator.
Okay.
So I didn't plug in once on my trip. So I'm kind of completely off the grid. And so what I wanted to create with my custom van was something that I could be completely off grid. It's kind of like I call it a boondocking van, which is where you're like off the grid, miles away from anybody. And of course, I go into cities when I'm restocking on food and doing laundry and, just kind of getting connected back into, civilization. Yeah. But I wanted something off the grid.
Yeah, I was wondering why you didn't go with an RV, although, some of the European RVs are similar to, I think, what you built. I mean, they tend to be smaller chassis, a little bit more self-contained sort of thing, and I guess closer to what you did, but you basically took a standard kind of commercial Ram van and turned it into your house.
Yeah, Europe definitely has it right. They're definitely more efficient and smaller. The RVs in America are just kind of the bigger the better. And but Winnebago is making a Revel. It's called a Revel, which is a 4x4 Sprinter van, and then they make a Travato, which is the exact same van that I have. But those are very cookie cutter. They're made for the masses, and I wanted a specific layout for my van.
Mm-hmm.
And those don't have a ton of gear storage. So under my bed, I have a ton of storage. So America's coming around as far as, the van makers. There's a lot of custom van maker companies that are popping up, and, you can go to them, and a lot of them have like a 6 month to a year waiting list where they'll build it out exactly how you want. But as far as like RVs, they're just not kind of, Europe for sure. They're really, compact and tiny, and they do a really good job.
Yeah, I remember years ago I met a guy who owned a company, and I think the company was someplace in the middle of the country where they build all kinds of RVs and stuff. But he actually built a 4x4, and it was a Chevy or GMC van, and originally built it just for people to kind of hunt and fish and do that. Then he started to build essentially small camper vans with a little bit of a raised roof so you could stand up inside of it, and they were pretty unique because back then, if you were looking for a four-wheel drive van, you were building it yourself. Mm-hmm. And they turned it into, you know, their own little captive market. But you're right, it became one of those things where it was such a small company, you would have to order it in January to get it in August.
Yeah, when I first started, came up with the idea of doing it, I started with tiny houses. You know, I watched the tiny house shows, and then I quickly realized that I wanted a van. And then I started looking at companies that that build out vans, and I contacted about, I think, 5 or 10 companies, and I had singled out one company that gave me a really good price, and they did really good quality. And when I called them back like a month later, when I had finally bought the van, they had gone from a 4-month waiting list to a 7-month waiting list in just a month. Mm. And it was getting so popular. And now I actually met the owner of that company when I was in Colorado. I actually bumped into him at a rock climbing gym. They have a year-long waiting list now. So it's definitely getting like more and more popular, especially with, you know, Instagram and social media. Yeah. People are starting to get turned on.
Did he offer you a job while you were there?
No, but I showed him pictures of my van, and he was very impressed, and he wanted to take a look at it. So yeah.
Yeah. Let's start with the van. It was a basic shell. And how did you come up with the idea of what you needed, and how many times did you kind of change your plans?
Yeah, so actually the planning of the van took longer than the actual build, because I was figuring out the floor plan. I was figuring, first you need to figure out what model van you want, because they make a Ford Transit, they make a Ram ProMaster, and they make a Sprinter, Mercedes Sprinter. So each one of those have their own pros and cons. I went with the ProMaster just because it was a little bit better priced. The ratio of cargo space to actual overall length of the van was better. Mm-hmm. It has a little bit more right angles inside the cargo area for easier.
Less tricky cuts.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And then also the ProMaster is a lot less expensive to maintain, you know, as far as oil changes and repairs and stuff like that. So I personally went with the ProMaster. I know that the Mercedes Sprinter is probably the most popular, and the most like aftermarket stuff that they make is for the Sprinter. But you know, they're starting to come up with stuff for the ProMaster. So once you figure out what model van that you want, then you have to figure out which brand of van you want. Then you got to figure out which model you want, and then which options you want. So I went with the double door because I wanted the double door, so it has actually doors on the sliding doors on the driver and the passenger side, so I can actually get to some of my stuff from outside the van on the driver's side. And then I went with the longest model, which is it's like 159-inch wheelbase extended, which is an extra 14 inches, which, you know, allows me to have a full-size bed in the back, and I can fit my bike under the bed. So that extra 14 inches is actually really great, and it still fits into a parking space. Yeah. It might hang out, depending on the parking space, it might hang out like a foot, but I usually park in the back of a parking lot, you know, far away from where most people in front of the store. So after you figure out, you know, what size, you know, van you want, then you gotta then you need to figure out, you know, your floor plan, and that's really where I decided to do a custom build rather than a RV.
Yeah. Did you kind of sketch it out on a napkin, or did you use like a basic CAD program?
Yeah, so I spent months going on YouTube, going on Instagram, and looking at all the different floor plans that other people had done, and kind of Frankensteining, piecemealing, you know, what things I wanted. And then I drew it out on like graph paper.
Yeah.
I tried to make it as down to the inch as possible. Yep. And then I have a couple friends in Colorado, a married couple that are both architects, and I sent them kind of my crude hand-done drawing, and they actually went to a Dodge dealership, and they took actual measurements down to the centimeter, and and then they brought it back home, and they did it on CAD,
yeah.
And it was exactly what I wanted.
Perfect.
And a couple tweaks back and forth, and it was done. And then I started the build for pretty much from there.
Yeah. Now, did you hand build all the cabinets, or did you buy stock cabinets, or how did that work?
Yeah, so I did a lot of the work myself as far as insulating the van, running all the, you know, wiring. I did a lot of the wall panels and stuff like that. As far as cabinets, I didn't have the workshop necessary mm-hmm. to do that. So I have I had a company that I worked with that helped me build out the custom cabinets. I wanted I guess typical counter depth cabinets are like 24 inches, mm-hmm. but that was going to create too small of a walking walking area. Yeah. So I actually shrunk them down to 20 inches deep.
Yeah.
So I have more space in between. Yeah. So it's a little less cramped in the van. So I had those custom built.
Yeah. And did the person who was building the cabinets, did they kind of look at you and go, what are you doing?
So I'm in the real estate investment business, and I have a guy that builds my cabinets, but he was so busy that he wasn't able to do it. But there was a company in Florida that actually what they specialize in is remodeling RVs.
Oh, okay.
So they were very familiar with what I wanted to do. They had never done a cargo van.
Yeah.
But after the trip, I went back for them to kind of fix some stuff that was wrong.
Yeah.
And in that year that I had been gone, he said, it's really weird. After you came in to do yours, I've been getting calls nonstop of people that want to do vans.
Wow. Wow. So, whether it's a house or a van, the wiring's an important part. So be able to run, like you said, you run solar-voltaic for everything. And you're running a 12-volt inverter sort of setup?
Yeah, everything in the van is 12-volt pretty much. I have 110-volt outlets.
Yeah.
I actually have a water heater in the van. So if I want to take a hot shower, I can. I have like sort of an outdoor shower setup. A lot of people, you know, do propane setups. I wanted no gas whatsoever in my van. And then I also have an induction cooktop, which can boil a pot of water in like less than two minutes. So those are the only two things in my van that run on 110 volts. They eat up quite a bit of power, but I don't use them often.
Yeah.
But as far as it running the electrical, it's pretty easy. If you can watch, you know, some YouTube videos, everything's 12 volts. So, you're not going to electrocute yourself or anything like that. So then after you run all the wiring and everything's built out, then, again, with YouTube, you can watch YouTube videos and you can build out the whole electrical system with I have an inverter, and it's a really cool inverter. It's kind of a top of the line. I wanted everything in my van to be really nice, but it's actually hooked up to Bluetooth, so I can monitor my battery from my phone, and I can monitor, you know, what my solar panels are charging at. I can see, you know, where I'm at with, like, you know, my battery. So if I want to cook dinner, but I only have
so you have essentially a battery management system.
I do.
In the van. Yeah.
It's a battery management system, and it's I think it's a 2000 watt inverter, and I have a 300 amp hour lithium battery, which is way more power than I need. I honestly probably could get away without having the solar panel because it charges when I drive.
Right.
But I like to be off. I like to be parked somewhere for like a week at a time.
Yeah.
So that's where the solar panel comes in handy.
And when you were speccing out the van, did you specifically look for something with a big alternator on it? Or did it just come that way?
Yeah, it just happened that way. So it just kind of happened that way. There's battery management systems that have I don't know what you call it, but it's like an alternator sort of built in into it. So you can either do it that way, or you could hook it up to your van's alternator.
Now, like you said, you try to kind of unplug when you're on the road, but you're still doing some work, I guess, when you're on the road. And pretty much all cell phone, or did you put like a little Wi-Fi system in there? Or
yeah, that's something that I might add. I might add this year. It's all cell phone.
Yeah.
I have a it's called a cell signal booster. It's made by a company called WeBoost, and it basically gives you one extra bar.
Okay.
So if you don't have service, it's not going to get you service. But if you have, you know, three bars, it'll give you four.
If you have
two bars, it'll give you three. So that comes in handy. But I think I'm going to get like a hotspot, for that. I do try, and when I'm out in the woods, so to speak, or when I'm out in, you know, the wilderness, I try and be off my phone. And, you know, all my friends and family, they give me a hard time because, you know, they want to know where I am and stuff like that. But I try not to, you know, answer the phone or answer text messages when I'm out in the when I'm out in the wilderness. But when I'm back in the cities, I try not to spend too much time when I'm in the cities. But when I am, I'm usually going to like a smoothie shop or a coffee place to get their Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that. When you're here or wherever home is, mm-hmm. and you're working, mm-hmm. sounds like you work a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When you're unplugged and you're out on the road, what's it kind of done for your soul? You know, what's it, you know, what, have you become a different person because of it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I've become a completely different person. It really makes you think about yourself and what makes you happy. And, let's just say it gives you a lot of time to think about, you know, life and what life is all about and what society is, what's going on with society and people, you know, stealing almost a million dollars from their employer so that they can go out and buy facelifts. That story couldn't encapsulate more better what I'm trying to get away from. I've spent a lot of time, you know, growing, not only, you know, internally, but like, you know, education wise, I've listened to, because, you know, you're driving a lot.
Yeah.
So I've listened to hundreds of hours of podcasts and radio. I've listened to probably 18 audiobooks on this trip. So, it's given me a lot of time to grow personally. So, it's the best decision I've ever made.
Was there anything that you listened to specifically that was sort of an inspiration for you or I guess at any point when you were doing this, did you ever say, maybe this wasn't a great idea?
No. Sometimes it can get a little lonely, I have friends on the West Coast, you know, from college that ended up moving out there. So that helped a lot, you know, visiting friends and having that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you're in a beautiful location and you're just like, wow, I wish somebody was here to be able to spend that. I would say that would be the only negative. Mm-hmm. You know, I would like to have somebody with me on these trips. But as far as, you know, I used to hate driving. And I know that's probably going to be a sore spot with your listeners, because I know a lot of people love to drive.
Well,
cars
I always say there's almost nothing I enjoy more than driving, and there's almost nothing I hate more than driving.
That's a good point.
So, you know, there's on the right road with the right car, nothing. It's perfect.
Yep.
Stuck in Boston traffic. Uh-uh.
That's exactly how I feel. So when I first started the trip, the one question that I had was, am I going to get tired of driving a month into this trip and I'm going to want to stop?
Yeah.
It's the two types of driving. And the second type of driving where you're stuck in traffic, I rarely have experienced that, because I'm only in cities for like a day or two. And it's usually, you know, like I have the ability to drive when everyone else is at work. What I thought was going to be the worst part of the trip has ended up being my favorite part of the trip, which is the driving. Because when I'm driving, I can tune out and listen to, you know, a podcast or a radio show or an audio book. And I really feel like I'm like, it's almost like I call it found time.
Hmm.
Where like normally 10 years ago, I would just be listening to like music or, you know, sports talk radio or something, where, you know, I wasn't like learning anything, you know, and now it's basically like education time for me. So
yeah, no, that sounds good. Did at any point when you were doing any of this, did you, when you arrived, someplace you've never been, did you go, this might be home? I might want to live here.
Yeah.
Did you find some place that was the weather's perfect, this is everything I'm looking for, it's not too crowded, it's got everything I want, it's got this isolation, but it's got the people, it's, did you find the perfect place while you were out?
I found a lot of perfect places.
Did you?
Yeah. I kind of knew before the trip that I was potentially going to, the trip was sort of not only, going out into nature and not only, growing personally and really kind of delving into, my philosophies of life and stuff like that. But a part of the trip was kind of a tour of where I might want to live. And cause I've traveled my whole life and, luckily my father's a travel agent. So I've gotten to see a lot of the world and I've every time I go somewhere, I'm always like, wow, I could move here. But then I realize, oh, I'm on vacation. So it's probably a lot different when you're actually living here. And, I'm in Portland, Oregon was amazing. And I met really great people there. And, it's really beautiful city and, great lifestyle, but I was there in the summer and, on vacation, and then I'm thinking, what would this be like in January, when it's cold and gray and rainy, 7 months out of the year.
So,
there were a lot of places that actually disappointed me. And there were actually a lot of places that surprised me that I had never even thought of. I didn't even know that I was going to go there. Like a place like Boise, Idaho, it wasn't even on my list of places that I wanted to go. And I just spontaneously decided to go there. And I was like, that was a city that I was actually pretty impressed with. I thought Idaho was, kind of all potato farms and stuff like that. And it's actually a really beautiful city and an hour from, Sun Valley and the Sawtooth Mountains and beautiful, beautiful country out there.
Did you ever get to a place where you were sort of, you're parked up on a mountain, there's a beautiful sunset happening and all of a sudden somebody pulls up next to you? You think you're out in the middle of nowhere all by yourself and all of a sudden you hear somebody show up next to you?
Yeah. I mean, that happens. But typically the people that are pulling up next to you are kind of similar to you.
Yeah.
I tried to stay out of the campgrounds and stay out of the RV parks and stuff like that. I'd go into a campground, take a shower and then leave, and then I would find. So there's a lot of, it's called BLM land, Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah.
And they allow you to park there up to 2 weeks for free. And, that's really great. Really great, thing to have, because, that's pretty much typically pretty off the grid land.
Yeah.
It's not a developed campsite. It's just a dirt road into, a clearing. And so you might be in a piece of BLM land and, you might be there for a day or two and then somebody will show up or you might be the guy,
the
guy that's ruining somebody else's, but those BLM lands are so big that, you could be 100 yards away from somebody else and it's not too bad.
Did you ever kind of get out in the wilderness somewhere and hear, I don't know, bear and coyotes and go, maybe I'm staying in tonight?
I did have a couple of bear encounters, nothing too scary. I never ran into any grizzly bears, which are the more aggressive bears.
The ones that are going to eat you. Yeah.
So I ran into, on a couple hikes, I ran into a couple of black bears. To be honest with you, they're more afraid of you than you are of them. And even in California.
No, they're not. I'm afraid of them. I don't care.
When they see a human or hear a human, they run away. So I try and make a little bit of noise. And you actually can't carry bear spray in California because it doesn't do anything. They run away.
Yeah.
So I thought that was pretty interesting
because
I had my bear spray. I was ready to hike the John Muir Trail and they're like, oh yeah, you can't bring bear spray on this trail.
Hmm.
So
how far north did you go? Did you go up to Alaska?
I didn't go to Alaska. That was kind of my plan for my trip this year, but it's 4,000 miles
right.
from Canada
yeah.
to get to Alaska. And then once you're in Alaska, it's a lot of driving to get to, I think there's like 7 national parks in yeah. Alaska. So I think that's going to have to be like a full summer. And there are so many places on this trip that I didn't get to go to that I really want to see. And a couple places that I really liked, like we were talking about, like places that yeah. I think I could move yeah. that I want to go back to. So I think this year I'm going to kind of do a sort of greatest hits and also places that I didn't get to see, because I added a lot of stuff on my trip that I wasn't, and I extended, like I was yeah. only going to spend 2 weeks in Portland. I ended up spending like 5 weeks there just because I loved it so much and I met some great people there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to maybe do Alaska in year three or yeah. at another time.
So yeah. this is an ongoing adventure for you.
It kind of is. I'm trying to figure out a way to, you know, maybe do 4 or 5 months working and 6-7 months, you know, on the road. You know, trying to figure that out. And I'm shrinking my overhead even more than it is now. I sold everything before this trip, so I don't have any ego or anything like that. You know, I did when I was younger. You know, I had a lot to prove to everyone.
Yeah, you did.
Right now it's all about cutting my expenses and figuring out how to do this, you know, at least for the next 2 or 3 years.
Was that all self-taught as far as the how to like comb through your finances and look and see what's extra, or did you get some guidance along the way?
I would say a little bit of both. You know, my dad and my parents are very, frugal and very good with money. I've read, some books like, Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a really good book about, finances and investing. A lot of it's like sort of like, learning from friends and family, and a lot of it's, self-taught. But I went through a period when I was, making a lot of money, in my late 20s, early 30s, where I had a lot to prove to myself and other people. And I went out and bought an Italian sports car and bought a Rolex and bought a waterfront condo in Miami. And I was that guy. And I quickly realized in less than a year, like that was not me. And I was trying to live someone else, what the media wants to project yeah. on, and within a year I had my watch sold and my car sold and the condo.
Well, I have to ask, what kind of car was it?
Maserati. Of course you need to ask, because yeah. it's a car show.
in Miami, that's the lifestyle, though. And I remember talking to a bartender in Miami that had a Ferrari, and I'm like, wow, bartenders must pay good. And he'd go, no, it's all about appearance.
Yeah.
He said, it's all about expensive clothes, expensive cars. He said to me, I live in a really nice condo, but I share it with 4 people because it's all about your address and what you drive and the way you look, as opposed to like Key West, where the guy that looks like the biggest bum is the guy with the most amount of money.
Yeah, it's very true. I didn't live in an apartment with 4 people. I had my own place, but Miami is like that for sure. And when I all my friends, they all live in Miami and South Beach and stuff like that. And when I told them, what I was doing, they thought I was nuts. And pretty much everyone in Miami that I told thought I was nuts. And then I didn't show anybody the van until yeah. it was done. And then when I showed everybody, then they were like, oh, okay, I get it. They thought yeah. I was going to be like, like a creepy van down by the river type thing. But what's funny is, so everyone in South Florida thought I was crazy and they just didn't get it. But when I drove that van to Canada and Oregon and Washington and Colorado, everyone stopped me. I would have people waiting outside the grocery store, standing outside my van, waiting to talk to me, wanting to ask me about my van, wanting to look at it. Every time I would stop for gas, people would yeah. ask me about it. So it's kind of shows the difference in, I don't want to say East Coast versus West Coast, because I know a lot of people, on the Northeast and stuff like that aren't superficial like the people, in South Florida. But people on the West Coast, they kind of get it.
Yeah.
They kind of get the whole
lifestyle. No, it sounds fascinating. And you mentioned social media a couple times. Are you doing a blog on this, YouTube on this, any of that sort of stuff? Or
Yeah, I have a blog. I've just finished building out the website, and I've got one blog post. I'm planning on spending, you know, the next 3 months. I have them all written in my phone. I just haven't put them on the on the website. But the blog is theboondocker.com, and it's exactly how it sounds, theboondocker.com. And then my Instagram is thebdkr, which is, you know, abbreviated boondocker.
Yeah.
So, so that's my Instagram, you can get to my blog through, there's a link in my Instagram from it. They both link to each other.
So when are you going to pack up again and head out?
Probably spend the next 3 or 4 months working down in South Florida. And then I want to try and be on the road by April or May. I want to start in like Arizona and Utah, and I think I kind of did the trip wrong this past year where I was in hot areas in the summer and I didn't quite think that through. So I want to be in, you know, in hot areas in the spring, and then by the time July and August roll around, I want to be in Canada.
And I haven't traveled that much, but I have been to certain parts of Arizona, and it is fantastic. It's a beautiful area out there. And same thing, I went to Utah, and I went up to like Park City, where all the billionaires live. But once you get away from that area too, it is phenomenally beautiful.
I really like northern Arizona.
Yes.
Flagstaff and Sedona.
Yes.
I actually met a couple rock climbers in Yosemite, and they ran out of water on their climb and food, and they topped out of Half Dome right when I was at the top. And I was the only person on Half Dome, 'cause I was there right after the wildfires, and nobody knew that Yosemite was open.
Oh, okay.
And so it was like a ghost town in Yosemite. And, I had a full bottle of water, and I gave them my water, and then they ended up coming back to my campground, and it was another 5 miles. So I actually let them stay at my campground, and we ended up becoming friends. And one of them lives in Arizona. So as I was driving back, I hung out with him and his girlfriend, and they took me hiking and climbing. So northern Arizona is definitely, I'm going to spend a lot of time there. And Utah, absolutely. Right outside of Salt Lake City is you know, Park City and a couple of really great parks. I spent some time in Salt Lake City and just outside of Salt Lake City. And Utah has, I think, about 7 national parks too.
So yeah, when you go to Sedona, and what is it, the Vortex?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just kind of a cool,
Sedona's
mystical
paradise on earth.
Yeah, Sedona's
paradise on earth.
Sedona's really cool. It's a lot of it's sort of hippie-ish. Where it's a lot of like new age type people live there.
It's a weird combination. I was there probably 10 years ago, but it was hippie-ish and like cowboys carrying guns.
Yes,
you know, it was just weird, and everybody got along.
There's a lot of cities. There's a lot of cities like that out west. Like Bend, Oregon, is kind of like that a little bit. Flagstaff's like that a little bit. It's kind of cool. You know, Santa Fe and Taos, New Mexico, are like that. Where it's, you know, you have the old, you know, you have the old wild, wild west people that still live there, and then you have the hippies that have moved in there. And then on top of that, you also have the, you know, the millionaires that buy the, you know, the acreage out on the outskirts of town, and then they come in and eat at the, you know, vegan restaurants and stuff like that.
No, it sounds like a fascinating trip. We'll let you get out of here, but it's theboondocker.com is where you can find your blog, and your Instagram is
the BDKR.
And you can find all the photos. You can look at the van. Is there places for people to leave comments if they have questions and stuff too?
On my Instagram, you can leave comments. The BDKR links to my personal Instagram as well.
Yeah.
There's a link in there to, if you want to just leave me comments on my personal one as well. But Instagram's the best way to get a hold of me.
Yeah. No, it sounds fascinating, and I wish you the best of luck in continuing your adventure. And when you're out on the road, give us a call.
Thank you very much having me.
All right. We need to take a break, pay some bills. Dennis needs to do some work. I can take a break. You're listening to the Car Doctor program at AM 950 WROL. The Spirit of Boston phone lines are open at 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Free. I keep blowing on down the road. fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-648-9175. 800-648-9175. That's 800-648-9175.
If you could do something to protect your family with just 10 minutes effort, would you bother? If something should ever happen to you, that 10-minute effort could mean the difference between hardship and financial security for your loved ones. Life insurance is something most people don't like to think about. Too many people do nothing until it's too late. The reason? People expect it'll be a big hassle. Ethos changes all that. Ethos is modern life insurance for people who don't have the time for fine print, extra doctor's appointments, or hidden fees. Ethos is affordable. It only takes about 10 minutes to apply online, and you'll be taking the first step in ensuring your family has the help they need to maintain the life you're building for them, even if the unexpected happens. Ethos brings you choices that don't require an in-person meeting with an agent, and in most cases, there's no need for a doctor's appointment. Ethos, life insurance for the 21st century. Apply online in just 10 minutes. Get a free quote now at getethos.com. That's getethos.com. Getethos.com.
The more our family grew, the smaller our old car got. So we upgraded to a Honda Odyssey. It's from Kelley Blue Book's 2016 Best Value brand and comes with standard features like Bluetooth, so my wife can remind me of all the things I've forgotten to bring home. Ah, the diapers.
Go to www.hondacarsofboston.com or 100 Broadway, Route 99 in Everett, Mass. Call 617-276-1179.
Based on 2016 brand image awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit kbb.com for information. See dealer for financing details.
Have you racked up more than $10,000 in credit card debt? Are you barely getting by making minimum payments? You should know. The credit card companies are tricking you into thinking there's no way out. Credit card companies would rather you didn't know that there are ways you can become debt-free and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. There are debt relief programs that help people like you escape overwhelming credit card debt. National Debt Relief has helped tens of thousands of people just like you reduce more than $500 million of debt. National Debt Relief has helped so many people. They're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to declare bankruptcy or take out a consolidation loan. You have the right to settle your debt for a mere fraction of what you owe. Reduce a portion of your debt now. Call National Debt Relief at 800-518-4020. 800-518-4020. That's 800-518-4020.
If you could do something to protect your family with just 10 minutes effort, would you bother? If something should ever happen to you, that 10-minute effort could mean the difference between hardship and financial security for your loved ones. Life insurance is something most people don't like to think about. Too many people do nothing until it's too late. The reason? People expect it'll be a big hassle. Ethos changes all that. Ethos is modern life insurance for people who don't have the time for fine print, extra doctor's appointments, or hidden fees. Ethos is affordable. It only takes about 10 minutes to apply online, and you'll be taking the first step in ensuring your family has the help they need to maintain the life you're building for them, even if the unexpected happens. Ethos brings you choices that don't require an in-person meeting with an agent, and in most cases, there's no need for a doctor's appointment. Ethos, life insurance for the 21st century. Apply online in just 10 minutes. Get a free quote now at getethos.com. That's getethos.com. Getethos.com.
AM 950 WROL Boston. The spirit of Boston.
A service of Salem Media Group.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston, on this almost, it's the last Saturday for us of the year, where it feels like spring outside. It's like, for now. But it was like, I think it was 49 degrees when when I walked outside this morning, and even getting out of the car here at the radio station, it was, it felt like spring. It was weird, which is better than I remember. It was a few years, more than a few years ago. It was New Year's Day, and it was the concern at first night was it was so cold no one was going to show up, because I think the average temperature that night was like just under zero. Yeah, and it's not. So, I mean, I guess tomorrow it's going to be 25, but still.
No, it's going to be in the 30s. I won Patriots tickets, so I've been monitoring the weather.
Yeah. So, yeah, hey, it's all good. Hey, if you have a question about anything, give us a call at 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. And I'm not going to give away any tickets today.
Thank you.
Because I don't have any. But I've been promised I'm getting more auto show tickets. But I don't want to give them away unless I actually have them in my hand. Because that has happened before, that the envelope full of tickets disappeared. I don't know if they disappear at work. They disappear in the mail. They disappear. They don't make it. The guy who was going to send them forgot. But between now and next week, I should have them. In fact, next week, we're going to be talking to Chris from Paragon about the show coming up in Boston. And it's Martin Luther King weekend. That weekend is when the auto show is, where you're not going to be here.
Nope.
You're going to be in sunny Florida. And but I'm going to be at the auto show, I think. I sent an email to everybody here at the station to kind of let them know. And because the Massachusetts Auto Dealers Association is having a student skills competition, and they would like me to be involved with it, and it starts at 10. So I can't be there at 10 unless I'm there at 8. So the plan is to try to get into the convention center early, set up to do my program from there, and hopefully things will go as well as they did at Auto Toys in Randolph, where that remote broadcast seemed to go amazingly well.
It was spectacular.
Yeah, yeah.
Normally I'm stressed to the max, but that one went.
And there was a couple things, not that people really care about this, but when I've been there before, we used to use a thing that connected up to a phone line. And the first year it went pretty well, except I think someone faxed something or something. So, but it went pretty well. The second time we went there, I hooked up to thing and I said, "Have you guys done anything any different?" And they're like, "Well, no, everything's still the same." Well, come to find out, they changed their phone to Comcast, so it wasn't a real phone; it was a voice over IP phone.
Yeah,
and
ISDN.
And of course that doesn't work that good for that sort of technology. So then we went to the piece of technology I have now, which is what people use in studios. It's not really designed for mobile use. And I was able to hook up to their Wi-Fi, which worked good until everybody else was on their Wi-Fi. So this time I borrowed from work a portable Wi-Fi hotspot. And so I was the only one on it. So providing you have a good cell phone signal and the cell phone network doesn't crash, it's all good. So it all worked out. So that's my plan, unless the people at work want their Wi-Fi hotspot back. They haven't asked. I'm not giving it back. So anyway, we hope to be broadcasting live. And it's always fun to be at the auto show when it's a little bit early, because you get to see them set up. You get to see all the people coming in and set stuff up and kind of wander around a little bit while nobody's there. And it should be fun.
And I won't be thinking about it at all.
Oh, come on, once.
Probably not.
You're not gonna click on the WROL app just to listen?
Well, I'd like to say no, but
you might.
Libby would tell you otherwise.
Yeah, you might. You might. Same thing. A couple years ago when I was on vacation in Punta Cana, so we actually that week we actually did a best of show. You weren't here. Karen Flaherty was here, and so she created a best of show, and I'm like, hey, there's Wi-Fi here. Click, and I listened, and I'm like, I could have done my show from here.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. And I probably
that
should've...
was Joanne, his wife.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that happy. Yeah. Yeah. So, but anyway. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030 if you want to call. Toyota Motor Corporation has sold enough cars to put one outside every Japanese home. Now it wants to put robots inside. Well known for automated assembly lines, Toyota sees not so far off future in which robots transcend the factory and become commonplace in homes, helping with chores, even offering companionship in an aging society where a quarter of the population is 65 and millions of seniors live alone. Machines have become much smarter in the last decade or so, yet every attempt to build one that can do simple things like load a washing machine or carry groceries encounters the same basic physical problem. The stronger robot gets, the heavier and more dangerous it becomes. What Toyota is going for is, with its $29 billion in cash reserves, a new artificial intelligence center, and a well-respected inventor, Gil Pratt, heading the effort. This is a company with so many resources that you can never ignore them, according to a Tokyo-based analyst who covers robotics. Toyota has been experimenting with robots since at least 2004 when it unveiled a trumpet-playing humanoid with artificial lips, lungs, and movable fingers that could accompany an actual human orchestra. Since the research has become more practical, Toyota's latest android, the THR3, is a kind of avatar that can be manipulated remotely via wearable controls with vision goggles that allow the users to see through the machine's camera eyes. This device could one day serve as arms and legs for the bedridden or a surrogate for relief workers in disaster zones. In 2015, the automaker spent $1 billion in its AI-focused Toyota Research Institute in Silicon Valley. Last year, it set up a $100 million fund to invest in startups and new robotics technology. The year the company restructured its partner robot division to speed decision-making and shorten development time, there's internal pressure of all of a sudden to move faster, according to one of the Toyota folks. The road to robots has its setbacks. In 2011, Toyota demonstrated a machine for lifting patients in and out of a bed, but engineers had only tested on healthy volunteers. Once they discovered the frail and elderly required a more delicate touch, it didn't work. Another device, a personal scooter, resembled a Segway, looked promising, but it was kept off the street by regulatory holdups. Outside of factories and warehouses, in fact, unfilled promises have been the main story for robots. Boston Dynamics, a ballyhooed firm started by engineers in MIT, for example, has spent more than 12 years developing four-legged automations, but still hasn't proved they can be commercialized. Our buddy Craig Fitzgerald, who filled in for me when I was on a plane, used to work behind this Boston Robotics, Boston Dynamics, and they had these, like, literally mechanical cows. And every once in a while, he'd do a video and see this mechanical cow thing walking by his office door, which I thought was kind of funny. Most of the $2.1 billion spent by consumers last year on household robots was for automated vacuum cleaners and lawnmowers. Toyota says the need for elder care will change that. The automaker illustrates the point when, with a chart showing Japan's inverted age pyramid by 2050, when a third fewer workers will have to support twice as many old people as today. Some 22% of the world population will be over 60 by then, according to the World Health Organization. And Toyota's human robot is a machine the automaker sees as closest to making a leap from lab to living room. The robot equivalent of a Toyota Corolla, all function and no frills. The HRS is basically a retractable arm on wheels and with a video screen on top with two large camera eyes to give it kind of a face. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about having a robot.
Robot uprising.
I know.
Look how well Alexa's doing. What was it? There was something. I saw an article that it told someone to kill their step parents.
Oh,
Alexa did this.
Alexa did. Well, I know. Well, I don't know anything about Alexa, but at the Salem Radio Holiday Party that you didn't go to,
I was sick.
There was a Yankee swap.
I was sick.
There was a Yankee swap, and I think it might have been Bobby Brooks, but I'm not sure. There was a Christmas pickle, Christmas ornament, which apparently has a whole history that goes with it. But attached to the Christmas pickle was a Alexa Dot, Echo Dot thing. And everybody just saw the Christmas pickle and went, yeah, I don't know what that is. And I knew there was the Amazon Echo thing behind it. So when everybody was swapping their gifts, I went, I'm taking that. And now I actually have Alexa, which I never, which I always said the regular Alexa. I'm like, why would I spend $100 or whatever they cost to have something listen to me all the time?
Exactly.
I got it for free, so it's still listening. It you walk by and it's going boop, little lights glowing because it hears your footsteps, and it kind of turns on when it senses motion, and so far all I've said is you know, what's the temperature outside, and it kind of tells you, you know, what's the temperature in Florida, it kind of tells you.
So you don't speak around it at all other than that because it still listens.
It still listens. Oh, I know it's listening, but.
Your phone listens to you too. That's why those convenient ads always
pop up. Yeah, I know. They even though Apple says no. Of course it does. So, but anyway, it's on Christmas Day we had our nephews over with their kids, and the 4-year-old and the 9-year-old were constantly going over to it and went, Alexa, play this or do this. And because I don't have Amazon, it can only play what it can play, which is off of TuneIn or Pandora, I guess. So,
speaking of Alexa, you can listen to this station on Alexa simply by saying to Alexa, play AM 950, The Spirit of Boston.
You don't even have to do that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, because I read it from... Yeah, I know. But I did it. I said, Alexa, play WROL radio. And all of a sudden, boop. Pops up. So when I said, Alexa, play the Car Doctor Radio podcast, not so good. I got a couple of things, but they weren't that. So and so because it uses iHeartRadio, I did put a link, or I went on iHeartRadio and submitted a podcast link, and I don't know if they'll use it or not. They get kind of funny about other radio stations sometimes, but we'll see. People can listen to the podcast here on, they can go to WROLradio.com and there's a link for the podcast from this show. You can go to johnapaul.podomatic.com. You can go to Stitcher. You can go to Burberry, Blueberry, Sunberry. You can go to FM Player. There's all, if you just Google John Paul Car Doctor Radio podcast, it'll come up with all kinds of different places to find it. Also, there's a website called podcasts, podcasts.com, where that's actually a free site for me, and I can, and it hosts my show there too. So, and that doesn't seem to have any limit on how much storage. I pay for storage on Podomatic. I don't pay for storage on podcasts. So I'll keep putting stuff there till they eventually go out of business or something. So,
and we won't necessarily have this.
Not today's show. I do not think
technical
so.
Technical difficulties and I
which,
never got it to
which,
work.
As Paul Sullivan is coming in today, and he usually puts a lot of stuff on that.
Could be an issue.
We may be going to records.
Oh, no. The Internet works just fine.
Okay.
He'll be fine with that. It was the Cool Edit system, which is our recording system.
Yeah.
Which, so I could not record today's episode of the John Paul Car Doctor program. Executive producer fail.
Yeah, well, it wasn't your fault. You believe in ghosts?
Sure.
A Denver woman has a bunch of questions after her 2007 Toyota SUV got stolen from the Denver International Airport, but they're not, where's my car and who stole it, because it was returned to the same spot 4.5 months later.
Dun, dun, dun.
Weird for sure, but it fits right in at Denver International Airport, where conspiracy theories have been floating around since the construction of the early 90s, the biggest of which centers on the creepy red-eyed horse statue that killed a sculptor by falling on him and severing an artery. Some of the other artwork featuring death-related themes.
Wait. Read that line again.
Red-eyed horse statue that killed its sculptor by falling on him and severing an artery.
The sculptor.
Sculptor.
Okay, I'm like, how did a statue kill another statue?
Some of the other artwork featured a death-related themes, including a devil jumping out of a suitcase and a statue of Anubis, the Greek god of death. Well, this is a great airport. Jeez.
This is the Denver at. Yeah. I was there not too long ago.
But back to Natasha Gray, Gay. She was at work at Ava's Car Rental in a temporary position when she came out and saw her car was gone. It was kind of like, what happened? I literally been at work for 3.5 hours. Gay told KDVR Denver. I was definitely panicking at that moment because I was really just wondering what happened. After about 5 months later, the car mysteriously reappeared. Insurance had already paid off the loan. Denver police were investigating, but we know who really took it. The ghost of the Denver airport.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Denver airport was, there was an old joke years ago. Remember when the plane landed in, like, the grass out in front of the White House? Remember when
Yes.
And there was like, what's the difference between that and the Denver airport? At least you can land at the White House because the way the airport was created, planes weren't able to land there all the time because of the wind and the angles. They had to rearrange all the runways to, you know, they kind of drew them out and said, oh, this is how we want the runways to work. And then it got windy. And they said, ooh. So they had to rearrange them. There's a Hyundai Elantra owner that drove 1 million miles in 5 years. Says here, my Hyundai has been a great car to me. I love to drive and have made a successful career out of it. So it was no surprise that I was able to get 1 million miles. The key is to prioritize regular maintenance and have a quality vehicle. To verify her record, Hyundai sent a team of technicians to inspect the car's system, service records, dealer history, and engine block numbers. Hyundai not only presented, the woman's name is Haynes, with a million-mile emblem to add to her odometer, an actual Hyundai part, but also set up a surprise party, which she received a much larger gift. Since she delivers auto parts and other products 7 days a week, day and night, Hyundai decided to order a surprise delivery for her. Hyundai said Farah dropped by a local auto repair shop to drop off what she thought was another auto part, but she instead was greeted by friends in her very own 2019 Hyundai Elantra.
Wow.
So they gave her another car. I don't know how you 200,000 miles a year. Sounds like a lot of regular maintenance appointments, and it is. The oil in Haynes' car has to be changed every 2 weeks. That works out to about 26 oil changes a year. Tire changes are a little less frequent. This is not only a milestone for Farah, but also for Hyundai and the quality of our vehicles, according to Dean Evans, CMO of Hyundai Motor Company. Reaching 1 million miles with the original powertrain in just 5 years is extremely rare and incredible achievement. We created the Million Mile Emblem because we believe in making things better for our loyal customers and look forward to other Hyundai drivers joining Farah in the 1 Million Mile Club. That's a whole lot of driving.
That is way too much driving. In
5 years. So 200,000 miles.
7 days a week. Oh, God love her.
Yeah.
That's dedication.
I guess.
That I just do not have.
I know. I know. Me either. There are... So when's the best day to go buy a used car or buy a new car? Now. Today. Due to the calendar, we always have strong selling days towards the end of the year. Saturdays, which are always the strongest selling days, on December 29th, combined with Monday, New Year's Eve, which is always among the top selling days of the year. As we head into that period, it's important to note that incentives are still likely to be down overall for the industry. However, excellent deals can still be found on specific models. End-of-year deals should be bountiful as dealers look to sell the last of the outgoing 2018 model year. As of December 19th, that still accounts for roughly one-third of all new car inventory on cars.com. For six brands in particular, more than 45% of new inventory remains. Mazda, Audi, Dodge, Ford, Mitsubishi, and Jeep. Dealers from those brands should want to clear out the old given model year 2018 cars. So they're staying on the lots longer than they should. By contrast, dealers selling Subaru, Acura, and Infiniti are almost all the way into the 2019 model year with less than 10% of their inventory. If you were going to go buy something, go shop around and see what's out there. The Chevy Equinox parent company GM is offering employee pricing on several models, including Equinox. and the automakers advertise. Example, for you could buy an Equinox Premier for around $40,000. Total discounts amounted to some $6,000 if you finance with GM. Ford EcoSport, $1,700 to $3,600 off, depending on the region. Hyundai Tucson, $3,000 to $3,500 off, depending on trim or 0.9% financing. Kia Sorento, kind of same deal, $2,000 to $3,500 off, depending on trim levels. Nissan Murano, $4,000 to $5,200 off. Nissan Rogue, $1,000 to $3,500 off for 2018 model years. The Chevy Cruze, same deal, employee discounts on that. The Chevy Malibu, the Ford Focus. And then there's some cars that are going away. If you were thinking it was a great time to go buy an Alfa Romeo 4C, the little two-door sports car, better hurry because it's not going to be coming back. Alfa Romeo has a small but exciting roster of vehicles available in the U.S. I guess they're exciting. The Stelvio SUV, which I have driven in both the hot rod trim and the regular trim level. The Giulia, which I have not driven, and the Spider, which I drove when it first came out a few years ago. Couple of them are staying, a couple of them are going, but it looks like the 4C is probably going away because they didn't sell many, and they're expensive. The little Chevrolet City Express van, which is really a Nissan, four delivery shops and downsizing FBI surveillance teams may notice the discontinuation of the Chevy Express cargo van for all intents and purposes, which is a rebadged Nissan. So why not go out and buy the Nissan? But they were working against the Transit Connect, so they had some pretty good competition. The one that I'm a little disappointed with is the Ford C-Max. The Ford C-Max is the hybrid SUV, which sort of an SUV, which competes with sort of like a Prius V. It's actually a pretty nice little vehicle. Ford barely advertised it. Nobody knew it was there, and they're doing away with it. The Ford Focus is probably the last year for the Focus. Will probably be 19. It'll probably go away completely in 2020. Ford gave its Focus Compact the sunset treatment in 2018, but they'll sell them for a while through 2019. They're going to add some weird trim to it. The Hyundai Santa Fe Sport, the car that I own, for the 2014 model year, Hyundai decided to redesign the Santa Fe SUV by splitting it into two separate sizes, a three-row Santa Fe to replace the outgoing Veracruz, which wasn't a great car, and the two-row Santa Fe Sport to replace the Santa Fe. Half a decade on, Hyundai has decided to rename the Santa Fe as the Santa Fe XL and the Santa Fe Sport as just the Santa Fe, keeping the name sort of. Point being, Hyundai's sorting its lineup, branding out for 2019. And so if you want a Santa Fe Sport, get it now because they're not going to be around anymore. Lincoln MKX fell victim to rebranding, and it will be called the Nautilus, which I'm driving now and we'll talk about next week. Lincoln's doing away with the whole alphabet soup of names, the MKX and the MKS. And people don't like names. People like names. People like stuff. They like calling their cars by a name. They don't want to call it a letter, contrary to what BMW and Mercedes think.
And Mazda.
And Mazda. Although, there was an uproar.
Oh, boy.
There was a riot in the streets when they stopped calling the Miata a Miata.
What is it called now?
Well, they went back to calling it a Miata. They called it an MX-5.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And it was, and people were like, it's not an MX-5, it's a Miata. And then they kind of called it an MX-5 Miata. And maybe they said, but everybody knows it's a Miata. That's what it is. It's a Miata.
The car that I cannot in any which way, shape, or form fit in at all.
Convertible.
Down. Nope. When the convertible is down, I can't like really fit both legs in the car. Mm-hmm. Second of all, when I do manage to somehow contort my body to sit in the car, my head comes over the windshield, and my eyes line up where the windshield ends, but yeah, the top is supposed to begin, so I can't really see.
Yeah, yeah. The Miata is a small. I can fit in it, and the regular soft top convertible I'm okay with. The hard top convertible, the one that the roof folds into the trunk kind of thing, That one actually I felt, and I'm not claustrophobic. That one I felt it was too tight inside because of the way the roof is. There's too much of me for that car. And I have no problem with small cars. Two other cars that are going away, the Nissan Quest, which I'm still surprised is still there, and the Volkswagen Tiguan Limited. Volkswagen took an interesting approach to the latest generation Tiguan and successfully redesigned the compact SUV, but it kept selling the smaller one, which didn't make a whole lot of sense. So they were selling the old one, selling the new one, and the new Tiguan is actually nice. So, I don't know. It's goofy how they do stuff sometimes. Why don't we take another break? When we come back, we have some recalls to go over. And if you want to call us and wish us a Happy New Year, you can do that at 617-770-3030. We'll be right back.
Everybody's doing it, and everybody's making money at it, except you. You're losing holiday business to your online competitors, and you don't know how to get in the game. Talk to us at Salem Surround, digital marketing experts who offer a free analysis of your digital marketing effectiveness, even if you have none, and suggest methods that could dramatically increase your sales coming out of this season. We can design and implement all of your online marketing under one roof, give you monthly reports on results, and instantly move your dollars to the most effective areas of your online advertising and sales. Social marketing, geofencing, web search enhancement, event targeting, and more. Now, there are no limitations on where you can reach customers with Salem Surround, increasing sales dramatically. Learn more by logging on to surroundboston.com. That's surroundboston.com, connecting you with new customers.
The more our family grew, the smaller our old car got. So we upgraded to a Honda Odyssey. It's from Kelley Blue Book's 2016 Best Value brand and comes with standard features like Bluetooth, so my wife can remind me of all the things I've forgotten to bring home. Ah, the diapers.
Go to www.HondaCarsOfBoston.com or 100 Broadway, Route 99 in Everett, Mass. Call 617-276-1179.
Based on 2016 brand image awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit kbb.com for information. See dealer for financing details.
Come on, kids. We're late.
Honey, the car won't start.
Mom, the dog just sat on my science project.
Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At GetEthos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million, no hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases, with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day, with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to GetEthos.com. That's ETHOS. GetEthos.com. GetEthos.com.
The more our family grew, the smaller our old car got. So we upgraded to a Honda Odyssey. It's from Kelley Blue Book's 2016 Best Value brand and comes with standard features like Bluetooth, so my wife can remind me of all the things I've forgotten to bring home. Ah, the diapers.
Go to www.HondaCarsOfBoston.com or 100 Broadway, Route 99 in Everett, Mass. Call 617-276-1179.
Based on 2016 brand image awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit kbb.com for information. See dealer for financing details.
AM 950 WROL Boston, the spirit of Boston.
A service of Salem Media Group.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor program. Subaru is recalling about 400,000 cars in the United States to replace an engine valve spring and to fix incorrect fuel range estimates. There's a big surprise. people lying about their fuel mileage. The recall for the fuel range reporting system involves 2018 Legacy and Outback models, which could give incorrect low fuel warning and range estimates. A software error on 228,000 cars could make the gauges show mileage remaining. Oh, I like this one better. It says that you might have like 50 miles to empty, when in fact you have no miles to empty. So you run out of gas. Subaru said the company first discovered the problem in December of 2017. Continental, the supplier, finished its investigation in July and determined by October that a software update is necessary. Subaru has applied the fix to 2019 models. At a later date, dealers will provide the 2018 models with this update. So if you own a Subaru Legacy or Outback, and don't believe how many miles to empty, because it's going to lie to you. The second recall over engine valve spring affects 165,000 cars, including the 2012 to 2014 Impreza, the BRZ, and the XV Crosstrek, the 2013 Scion FRS, which is basically the BRZ, represents 25,000 of those faulty engine springs can crack, fall off, allow the valve to contact the piston. All you need to know about that is it isn't pretty after that. Aside from rattles and excessive vibration, the engine can stall without warning and become severely damaged. I guess if the valve crashes into the piston. Starting with May of 2013, after receiving a report from Japan, Subaru increased the spring wire thickness by requiring the supplier to set tighter tolerances in the diameter during production. Still, despite receiving at least 15 reports of stalling cars in the U.S., Subaru was unconvinced of a defect based on the low failure rate. The company said it started a new investigation in November of 2016, which took 2 years, by the way, and dealers will replace the valve springs and potentially other damaged engine parts at an undetermined date. Toyota will contact Scion and Toyota owners separately. Honda and Acura recalling 65,000 cars in the United States for poor braking performance. The 2016 and 2018-19 Honda HR-V, the Acura MDX, and Honda Odyssey minivan are affected, including those that may have had replacement brake pads from prior service. Hydrogen gas, really, may become trapped in the brake lines due to insufficient coating of the rear brake calipers. When bubbles form in the brake fluid, the hydraulic circuit becomes compromised. Under braking pressure in the line compresses the gas and decreases the force of the fluid, which causes the pedal to feel soft and can reduce stopping power. Kind of an odd one, actually. You never know, I guess. And so they have 90 owner complaints, and they'll take care of it. In September, Acura recalled the NSX for brake light failure. They've sold like six of those, I think, so that's not too many to worry about. Honda's also recalling 100,000 18 and 19 Honda Odyssey minivans because the power sliding doors might open as you're driving down the road.
That would be a problem.
Apparently, according to Honda, some components of the power sliding door's rear latch assembly are prone to sticking, which can stop the front and rear latches from securing properly. The problem affects left and right power doors. Honda says the dealers have limited supplies of latch repair kits, but it anticipates having more in stock. Odyssey owners can temporarily disable the power sliding doors until the parts become available. That should be done only at the owner's request. But, yeah, the door can open up and whatever. But, yeah, it's just one of those things. And if you think your car is under a recall, you can check the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website, and you can actually put your vehicle identification number in. So instead of just seeing a broad number, so sort of like, oh, my Nissan Rogues have been recalled, you can actually put your specific number in, and it'll say whether your vehicle has been recalled and whether it's been fixed. So you can tell whether it's part of an open recall, which is kind of nice. So makes it all good. And because the recalls keep happening, Ford just announced a recall of 874,000 full-size and heavy-duty pickup trucks in the U.S. and Canada due to a defective engine block heater. So if you have one of these vehicles and you got the optional engine block heater to keep plugged in when it's cold, well, bad things could happen. The recall covers 2015 to 2019 Ford F-150 pickups, 2017 to 2019 F 250, 350, 450, and 550 Super Duty trucks. The automaker said the risk of fire only occurs when the vehicles are turned off and they're plugged in. Well, that would be when you're not using them. So Ford said in a statement that a splice connector in the block heater cord allows moisture into the wiring, causing it to corrode. The corroded wire could trip circuits or cause a short. To rectify the situation, Ford has instructed his dealers to replace the recalled block heater cords and either apply dielectric grease at the splice connector or replace the corroded units with new ones. The recall would be performed at no cost to consumers. Ford didn't say when it's going to happen. Block heaters provide steady flow of current to crucial underhood components to aid in engine starting, reduce wear. About half the cars recalled are sold in Canada or on the northern border, so probably not so much around here, but I know our diesel tow trucks are all plugged in when they're not being used, so they start up easily. The automaker said in a statement that they're aware of three fires that started as a result of faulty block heaters. So, and I guess in kind of the good news category, we were talking about Denver earlier. The city of Denver has deployed angels across the city at the base of the Rocky Mountains. Only these angels don't wear wings. Instead, they're armed with rewards for drivers that park correctly. According to CBS4 Denver, on Monday, police officers on bicycles are already on a hunt for drivers who park correctly by not blocking bike lanes. Officers have already handed out more than a few rewards. When one of these parking angels finds a driver parking so not to block bike lanes, they hand out a $5 gift card to be used at city parking meters. City officials told this TV station that it's important for drivers to pay attention to signs and exercise courteous parking behavior as the Denver cycling population grows. I don't know. Pretty good. And in the category of self-driving cars, ex-Waymo engineer Anthony Lewandowski could have dozed off as he made a coast-to-coast trip behind the wheel of a self-driving test car. He claims to have not touched the steering wheel of the car when it was on the highway between San Francisco and New York, a 3,000-mile trip. The milestone trip was promoted by Pronto AI Technology, which started after he left Waymo, which is a Google company. He's got some controversy, though, and there's some stories about what he did and what he didn't do. But apparently his cars only use six cameras, take information from the road. They don't use LiDAR, which is the spinny thing on the roof, which is what really makes self-driving cars work well. But he claims he did that long-distance drive and did it on the highway. Never touched the steering wheel.
I just want to apologize to some of the callers that are calling in now. It's a little late to get on the air. So if you're trying to call in now, sorry, the gatekeeper is closed.
Wow, you're mean.
I'm sorry.
You're mean.
The show ends around 10 o'clock.
I'm sorry.
It's just one of those things.
They're actually all Paul Sullivan's listeners anyway. I like how you
said the show ends around 10 o'clock.
Around 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Since when have I ever left on time? It's early. It's late. Hey, there's Paul Sullivan right there. I heard his voice.
Not only that, I can hear you through the headphones that Joanne nicely.
No, it was actually we had an in-studio guest earlier.
Oh, good. Okay.
And
I heard that.
Yeah.
On the way in.
Yeah.
Sounds Dennis's friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've known him since he was 10.
Wow.
But he didn't have the self-driving car.
No, he didn't, but he spends like 6 or 7 months a year just traveling the country, doing nothing.
Problem with doing nothing is you never know when you're done.
That's true.
It's true.
That's true. But
well, actually he does, because he has to go back to work, so that's when he's done doing nothing.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
But someday,
yeah.
I don't know what it would be like to have nothing to do and all day to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's controversy about that.
Yeah.
Some people say that it would drive you to an early grave. And other people say, I can live on the beach for 30, 40 years, you know?
So. Yeah. I am
one of those people. I don't know about the beach, but woods and mountains and stuff like that, yeah.
I
could deal with the beach, but I'm not a beach person.
I think it now, if, you know, Salem Radio will have me,
mm-hmm.
someday if I ever retire
mm-hmm.
from AAA, I hope they'll still let me come here
mm-hmm.
or
well,
be on
I
the air
you before,
here.
You're the best car show I ever heard.
I'm the only car show you ever heard.
No, that's not true. No, I'm a radio aficionado. You know that as well. So I've heard others.
That's right. That's right. You just keep your radio on scan. Just let it automatically change stations every, like, 90 seconds.
We're going to drive down to New Jersey tomorrow, and when you put on scan around New York City, you don't know what's on.
No, my experience of driving to New York makes me want to have satellite radio.
I have satellite radio for that reason, because when I was going down to Hilton Head every summer, I was like, you know what? I'm going to invest in satellite radio, and this way I can just put on stations, and it'll work.
Yeah. Yep. Because I love local radio.
No, I do, too. But it's fascinating.
York, but New York is just
not local anymore.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
Hey, you can actually hear the piano player.
I can.
Yeah.
Turn it down a little bit. Look at that.
I'm ordering
production.
But what control? Hey. What control? Hey, so what's coming up for the Irish Hip Parade today?
We have 3 hours of the last Saturday.